Wisconsin.
It's not a miracle. It's the Plant Rant with Sandra the Plant Lady, made possible by Baker Orchards at Centuria. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning. Every
and
day
guest.
Is kind of a miracle. Yes, good morning. We have Bill Ziegler here again from Z Orchard.
Good morning. Yeah, this is Bill.
We're going to talk about bees today. So we kind of got on that topic the last time you were on when we were getting ready for the maple farm tour, and we thought it'd be a great topic for a whole show.
So. You call that a hot topic then? Mm-hmm. Bees?
Bees.
Anyway.
I don't know, honey. Oh, gosh. You know, these day after 4th of July shows, this is the second time I've had a day after 4th of July show. They're somewhat interesting. A little sleep deprivation involved, you know. So last time it was getting ready for the maple syrup tour.
Okay, and now we're getting ready for the co-op farm tour, and it'll be the honey open house at Z Orchard at the same time next weekend. And a couple things. One thing, I do have a new observation hive where people will be able to, I'll pull a frame up and it's got glass on both sides of it. The bees are locked in, so they can't sting anyone. They're all inside, but you can watch them as they're feeding the brood and everything. It's really interesting. Wow. So we will have that active next weekend also.
And what's the time frame? I mean, you said the weekend, is it Saturday, Sunday, or
It's Saturday from 10 until 4.
Okay.
And that the co-op farm tour is sponsored by the co-op markets in the Twin Cities area, which encompasses the whole Twin Cities, and our 16 farms are being highlighted, and 7 of them are within 15 miles or so of Amory.
Oh, wow, that's great. What are some of the names of some of the farms within our own community?
Blackbrook, and I don't have the list right here in front of me. Okay. If you go to Z Orchard, the website or the Facebook page, there is a link to the co-op farm tours, and that has the full list of everyone.
That sounds really fun. And so that's a lot, especially, and I love that these co-ops are coming out of the cities, but that's close to 50% of the farms on the tour are from our local community. And you're saying within 7 miles of Amory. So, I mean, that's really our local
right
community.
And
I love that
the co-ops are doing, they changed their format a little bit, and this year they are just highlighting Bulbrook Farms is another one that with Sylvia.
Yeah, great.
And they changed the format a little bit this year where they are highlighting the eastern side, so it'd be East Metro and like Marine on St. Croix and on the Minnesota side, and then into western Wisconsin. Next year, they'll do the south and west.
Okay, so then we wouldn't be as involved.
Then we wouldn't be as involved in it next year. But, yes, and then I have the honey open house, which will be this weekend, and I kind of just put the two of them together. Yes.
A week from now.
Yep. Week from this Saturday.
Honey open house. Okay. So next Saturday, which is what, around the 12th or something like that?
The 13th.
13th. Okay. That's what people need to know.
Yep. 13th. And that will have some fresh comb honey from this year. And then also it'll have, like I said, we'll have Q&A where people can ask questions about the bees, and we'll have the observation hive where they can watch it. And we also have from 10 until 2, Fiddlehead Kitchens will be serving brunch at the orchard, which is always very popular.
And I'm guessing, knowing Fiddleheads, they'll be incorporating honey into some of the things that they'll be
using. Yes, they will be.
And they do so, everything that they do is fresh. It's amazing. Whatever's in season is what they typically use, and they do a wonderful job. So 10 to 2 if people want to come and eat the Fiddleheads. Okay. Fun. That sounds really good. I was trying to get online here to look up so we could get a list of those farms, but my internet is not. Oh, now we've popped up. So we go to your site. not that people can't do this themselves, but it's nice to have it. So how are the bees doing anyway this year?
Well, this year the bees are a little bit behind. I'm still learning a lot about bees. I haven't been doing it that many years, but I'd always been told, and now I'm learning firsthand, that on the drier years, the bees produce more honey than they do on the wet years. And there are several reasons for that. And one of them is their production is on the, their production is based on the number of fly days. That'd be the number of days they're out flying. Because on the dry years, there's no rain days, so there's no days where they're hanging out in the hive. They're out scavenging something every day. And if they're not out scavenging and they're in the hive, it's also counterproductive because they are in the hive eating their stores.
You know, this kind of sounds like us, doesn't it? Like you have a snow day or a rain day, we just hang out and lounge and munch and... and don't get out and do our other outside tasks.
So then they are eating their stores, so then that brings it down. And also, with the hard rains we've been having and stuff, it keeps the pollen pretty well washed off a lot of the plants, so it doesn't hang in there quite so much for them to find. But they're still doing fine, but the production just won't be... on a wet year, just won't be what it was on the drier years.
That is so interesting. I mean, once you say it out loud, it makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Like not going out in the rain. And
I
we've
didn't
had a
think
lot
of that until,
of rain.
Yeah. So.
Although it's been a big time saver for me, all this rain.
There's been no watering.
Although I've spent my time mowing instead, like I'm sure everyone has been. Doing a lot of mowing. We're finally getting to where we can get that deck down just a little bit lower each time.
Yeah, the rain has been really advantageous, though, because I put in a bunch more trees this spring, so the Y orchard, we call it, is the second orchard in the back. I've got 120 trees back there now. You can't see that from the road. So.
Right on. Well, and then, for young trees that are getting rooted in.
Yeah, when they're rooted in. So, and those are all new types of trees, and they will be pretty much in production, hopefully, next year, because they are dwarfs.
They are dwarf, so they'll produce.
They should start producing. There's a few apples back there this year, but by next year there should be... some. And the other orchard is a little bit light on the amount of apples this year.
You think that's a result of pollination or something with the blooming or?
Yeah, I think it's just a combination. One is some of the trees had really heavy production last year and then they kind of are light the next year.
That happens.
And the Honeycrisp are kind of notorious for doing that. And they are some really big trees, but they are kind of have few apples. And we had a little issue with some deer not respecting my fence, and they got in there. And so there's a lot of the trees that don't have very many apples from about 4 feet high and down.
Stinkers.
So.
What are some of the cultivars of the Y orchard that you're going to be introducing?
Okay, new orchard where we planted back there, I planted a bunch of Kindercrisp, which is a new one. It was developed by an orchard up by Annandale, Minnesota, and that is a very good apple. And I have some of those in the other orchard, and we had some for sale last year, and people like them very much. They're a small, about the size of a baseball apple, and they start producing the very end of August, and they'll hang on the trees and are still good into October.
Wow. Okay, and that is really unusual, people, because an early season apple, they typically, they're ready early, but they are not good storing apples. It seems like our late apples are the ones that you could really keep for a long time. But
they are one that is crisp, and you don't see that very often in an early apple.
No, not much.
They're usually softer. And then we planted, the others are from the University of Minnesota. There's Firestorm.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
It's a bright red Honeycrisp. And then some Triumph, which is another offshoot of Honeycrisp. And then last year I planted a bunch under the of MN33, and last year they named it, and it's named Kudos. K-U-D-O-S.
Yeah, Kudos. Nice. Are those,
so those are all new apples.
And there was Firestorm Triumph and this Kudos. Are those all University of Minnesota introductions or?
Yes. The Kinder Crisp isn't, but the others are all University of Minnesota apples.
Right. That one you said came from yep. Annandale. So they must have had just a good cross pollination amongst the trees. And
yeah, there are some of the other seedling orchards do make their own cross pollinations. There's down by Lake City and La Crosse, there's several older orchards that make some of their own apples
well,
also.
And thank you, Baker Orchard, for sponsoring Plant Rant. And they do have a lot of their own. And some of those were just from the history, like Grandma Ruth Baker, which would be Dan, the senior partner's mom. Like, she, on the one farm, she would just let the stuff grow out of the compost pile, and then when it matured enough to produce, if it was good, it was a good one, you know. But they've got a lot, and they've actually trademarked, like, the one, the Big Ben, to keep the name. And so there's a few apples there that you can only find.
Yeah, and there's a few of those that are developed outside the University of Minnesota, so... But we were really supposed to be talking about bees today.
I know. Well, this is why it's called Plant Rant, Bill. It takes on a life of its own. But yes, back to bees. So the winter season,
yeah,
challenging.
Yeah, they are doing okay. And now I've added on my honey supers, pretty much all of them. All the hives have honey supers on them.
Can you explain
what
that is?
What that means is... The two bottom boxes normally are 9.5 inches deep boxes, and those are called the brood boxes. That's where the bees live, and that's where they lay the eggs and everything. And a lot of times we'll put what we call a queen excluder, which is a screen, per se, that you put between that and the top boxes, so the queen can't go up into where the bees are going to be storing the honey. We put that in there because then you don't end up having larvae and everything else mixed in with what you want to extract for honey. It keeps the bees in the bottom two boxes, because the bees at peak of the summer, which they're getting right to that stage now, the good strong hives are all at about 80,000 bees.
Wow.
So, and I got 21 hives, so you can multiply that out. That's a lot of bees in a neighborhood.
Wow, 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 wow. Oh, my goodness. I don't even know how to make a number that big. I'm writing it down on my piece of paper. We'll do the math on that later. That is a lot.
So,
wow.
But yes, they are doing good. And like I said, this next week now, I plan on going in and we'll extract some honey, and we will pick out some of the frames that have good honey in them to make our comb honey, because there's always some people who like the comb honey. And the comb honey is more expensive than the other honey because the wax. It takes the bees multiple times the resources to make the wax than it does to fill it with honey.
Sure, so if you pull the comb honey, you're pulling the comb, and now they've got to rebuild the wax part.
Yep, then they
got to
rebuild the wax.
Where
otherwise, if I just cut the tops off, I give the wax back to them, they can just go ahead and fill it with honey again. So the production...
How do they make the wax?
Like, what there's a certain age that the bees, when they're in the hive, the bees, a worker bee lives an average of 35 to 45 days.
Okay.
Of which, the first 3 weeks of that, they don't leave the hive. They stay in the hive. They're hive workers. And I have charts for my education stuff where I show people that they start, the very first thing they do, they start cleaning house. They start cleaning the all of the cells out and things. And then they go move on to where they feed the pollen to the larvae, and then first they feed the older larvae, then they feed the younger larvae, then they go into where they can secrete wax, and they actually can secrete wax on their, it comes out of the glands on their backs. The other bee, hive worker bees pull it off use it to put in, to build the little, and then you'll see them in the hive. You'll see them taking, and it almost looks like they're playing a tug of war with a chain. There's a whole bunch of them. They link together. What they're actually doing is that's the way they measure of exactly what size the cells are going to be. We help them with that because they do make the cell right that we put in there has the dimensions of what a worker bee cell should be. But there's a certain amount of the hive decides they need drones. The cells are bigger. So then they'll take and build bigger cells. Then when the queen comes to the worker bee cells, she fertilizes the egg and it becomes a worker bee. If she lays it in the bigger cells and doesn't fertilize it, it becomes a drone.
This is fascinating. So I'm going to have to re-listen to my own show because this is so much. I've been taking notes. Like, this is so fascinating.
Then the hive, when they decide they want to replace the queen or they need a new queen or their queen disappears, if there are worker bee eggs that are relatively fresh, they feed that egg into the larvae. They take, and when it turns into the larvae, they feed it royal jelly through the whole gestation period. It makes a bigger cell, and that becomes a queen. So the hive can make any worker bee egg into a queen if they want to.
Wow. Okay, and then where's the royal jelly at that they're getting? Or like,
that is another thing that the young bees in the hive can generate and make themselves.
Wow, this is just so interesting.
When you're working with bees, about the time you think you know something about them, you just find out about how much you really don't know.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
So,
and people use that royal jelly as in products.
Yes, they do. I have figured out I can I harvest and sell pollen, and I harvest and sell propolis, which is a propolis is the antiseptic portion of what the bees make in the hive. They coat the insides of the hives, they glue everything together with propolis, and that is what is the antiseptic or the medical part of the beehive. Is a lot of the propolis is used for, like, if they make salves and things like that.
Okay, they're like little chemists. How do these bodies produce, like, so they can make royal jelly, they can make the wax, they make this propolis, it's natural antibacterial. Like, I mean, wow.
They've been doing this for millions of years, and it's not an accident.
No, but it's just, it's phenomenal is what it is. It's just, speaking of miracles, we started out the show at the beginning of the day. This is a miracle. Wow.
So, but yes, they are. And I do a lot of education with the fourth graders, come out a couple times a year. And I do a lot of for homeschool kids and anybody who has groups. We do little show and tells. And a lot of it is people have questions. And that's where I lead. So I got the basic information I can give out. But then the rest of it is just kind of show and tell.
Right, whatever they're interested in or asking you about, then that's the information that you give.
Yep. So, and most of the times I have answers. Sometimes there's things that I'll have to ask somebody else about. So
I love that, though. We're always learning. I mean, you can't know it all.
No, nope, that's what makes it fun.
I mean, eventually, right? But we keep trying and keep learning. And
so,
Wow, I'm kind of having my mind blown here. Actually, it's pretty phenomenal. Just, it's a lot to. So okay, so they have different size depending upon if it's going to be a worker or a drone or when they are creating a new queen. And then they feed that egg specifically, or that larva, the royal jelly, and
And they take and say when they've like my bees. I take him to Ames Farms over in Delano, Minnesota, and he takes them down to by Houston, Texas for the winter. And all they do down there during the winter is they add more bees and raise queens. And what they will do is if they have a really strong hive and they want to make some more hives, they will take a really strong hive and they do what they call grafting. They take the little eggs and they graft them into these cells that are bigger on a man-made cells that are, so they got an egg in this one that's going to be the size of a queen because the queen cells are bigger. Then what they do, they'll take the queen out of that really strong hive. In about 24 hours, that hive will decide they don't have a queen, and they really want to have a queen. So then they'll take one of these frames that they got all these grafted eggs on and put it in there, and that hive will make every one of them into a queen.
Wow!
So they'll make, 50 to 100 queens in one. And then when them get capped, it's a labor-intensive thing. They go in and they take each one of those little queen cells and put them into a mini-mating nuke, which is a little bitty hive, with a few bees to take care of it because they have to separate all these queen cells before any of them hatch because the queen doesn't want any competition. The first one that hatched would go around and tear all the rest of them open so that would kill the other larvae because they don't want the competition. So they move them into separate little cells. So it's a intensive thing, but he makes a lot of hives and brings them back north then in the spring to sell.
Well, and I was going to say, I'm guessing that's where people like beekeepers can buy queens because someone is producing these queens that and selling them. Wow, interaction. We're kind of controlling nature, aren't we, in these situations?
We kind of tried that one year, but my cousin and I, but it's a large learning curve on that also. That's a whole nother story, so.
Well, yeah, because now you're kind of micromanaging what they would be doing on their own, but trying to create. So where does this royal jelly come from? So if they were creating 100 queens in one box, that's a lot of royal jelly to be feeding.
That's why they have to have a strong hive to do that. And now these bees, when they're doing this, they are not collecting, they're not out collecting honey for the stores and stuff. They're just expecting bees to harvest enough to keep themselves alive. They're not building honey. They're not harvesting honey. They're not they're not using it for pollinating the almonds or anything
just for
like
creating
that.
Queens.
Yeah, it's just so they just go on vacation for the winter. So
so wild. Well, Bob if people are interested, actually, we do have a co-op farm tour guidebook here at the station, which I love having a paper copy instead of trying to navigate things online, so thank you for this. And there looks like there is quite a few here, and let's see if I can. So there's quite a few in the city, and I know I do have listeners from all over the place, so there's few in Minneapolis and some in Frogtown, Minnehaha and St. Paul, but in our area, so Threshing Table Farm in Star Prairie, Big River Farms in Marina and St. Croix, which isn't too far to go across over, Foxtail Farm in Osceola, Z Orchard, of course, Black Book Farms, Turnip Rock and Cosmic Wheel, yum cheese. Let's see, Herbal Safari at Bulbrook Keep in Clear Lake, Oh, and the mushroom place, Northwood Mushrooms, which they've been on before as well. And so that would be fun to get to go and visit them while they're on the tour. LTD, Living the Dream, they've been on before. Racing Heart Farm in Colfax. White Pine Berry Farm in River Falls, which they should be having. Like, I know my raspberries at home are rocking right now. And then Rising Sun Farm and Orchard in River Falls. So if you were to get down that way. And then the ones in the cities, we may as well just list them all. What the heck? Youth Farm, Urban Roots, Frogtown Farm, Open Arms, Abundance Farm. And then the rest are what I listed. Wow, that's going to be a fun day. And July 13th and 10 to 4. So that tour is the one day at all the places, 10 to 4.
And like I said, if you go to the Orchard website or Facebook page, there's a QR code you can bring up and click on that, and it will bring up this guidebook with all the information.
People seem to like that. I'm not much for that. I can't quite figure out how that works, but most people know how to do it now. You see it at restaurants and things. But then it's nice because they can pop it right into their car and get a little map going and figure out a route.
Yep.
How fun.
They have some set routes on some of it, too. So.
Well, I just love that all these, like, we get these groups together, like co-op, right? Cooperative, and that the communities and the different farms work together and encourage each other and build it up. That's great.
I did a little program on this on the info break yesterday, I think it was. One thing I noticed in there that would be pretty handy is there's some tips that you give in the book as to if you're going on the tour, there's some things you ought to do.
Yeah.
I don't remember them, but they're in there.
Well, and thank you for announcing, thank you for doing that and announcing that.
Well, it's an interesting program. There's also a thing that I thought was pretty interesting is don't bring your animals with you on the tour.
Yeah, no pets are allowed. So here's what Bob's speaking of. So, and this is good, especially out here. So GPS can be spotty in rural areas, so please check your directions before leaving, which it's always good to have something written down on a piece of paper or, you know, print the map off before you go. Bring a cooler and some cash for the farm goods. Let's keep the money here. Please bring cash and not be using your credit card or swing by the bank at the ATM because that's important. I don't think people realize. And now with Square, some of those fees are less than what. But I know when I was at Funky Gardens, we paid that credit card machine year-round, and we weren't open year-round, and it added up to a lot of money. Stay on established paths. Don't pick produce without the farmer's permission. Bring sturdy, comfortable shoes that can get dirty, and it has been wet here, folks, so you're going to want probably muddy boots. And then, yeah, check the local co-ops. We'll have refreshments. And then, yes, keep your pets. The pets are not allowed on the tour, so I'm sure they could be in your car or something, you know, but if it's hot, why would you?
Also, and at the Orchard, I've just spread chips on a lot of my trails in the woods, but I will tell you that there are some really nice walking trails out there, but bring your whatever you need to stay away from the mosquitoes or they will carry you away.
Yes. Essential oils, folks, they can go a long way. But yeah, and then on the back of this, there's a little thing like a little route and include some places to stop for lunch and to get some snacks and how fun. Has this gone? So they've done this in the past or is this relatively new?
Sylvia Toughness was very instrumental last year in getting a lot of this going, I know. And I think this is probably the second or third year I've been involved with it, but it's a worthwhile group. It's a fun time.
Bob, do you know if Sylvia's talked about this on Deep Roots at all?
Well, I'm sure she has.
I mean, she's on every Saturday.
Every
she does
Saturday
a great
at 9
program.
O'clock, and she's, I'm sure she's talked about it.
Okay.
Because it's a, that's one of her things.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, and her archives are on her own, on Deep Roots Radio, like her own website, not
own
ours,
website.
Correct? Yeah,
yep.
So people can look that up and get some more information that way.
Bill, how long have you been fooling around at Z Orchard out there?
Well, I planted the first trees in 2009.
Oh, boy.
So it's not been that terrible long.
No, but it's a while.
It's a while.
You've got enough the knowledge you impart is firsthand, right?
Well, I always tell people I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you a lot of things to not do.
Yeah, learn school of hard knocks.
That's the way it usually works. Thanks, Bill.
Well, time as always, has flown by. I always look at the beginning and go, wow, okay, got 20 more minutes. Now it's like, okay, we have one. Bill, thanks for coming in again. I think, I feel like we could probably do, you're very welcome. I think we could do this again because there's just so much. And of course, this, we want to talk about bees, but we also wanted to promote this co-op farm tour. So hopefully we did well on both of those. And people can come see you next week for the Honey Open House from 10 to 4. Fiddlehead's Kitchen will be there from 10 to 2, putting out some great food. You'll have your observation hive so people can see it firsthand and know a little bit more what we're talking about.
This will all be tied right in with the farm tour because I'm putting them on. This is the same weekend.
So. Yep, I love it. And then people can come see you and you can give them more information. I'm guessing you'll have some of these guidebooks there available?
A limited amount of them, yes.
Okay. Well, people like to use their technology anyway. So I'm not sure who's coming on in August, but you never know. So people have been enjoying the show. I actually got some compliments at the farmer's market. The woman said, are you Sandra the Plant Lady? I said, I am. And she listens all the time. And her daughter's from Georgia, and she listens. So I thought that was pretty exciting. So anyway, thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back the first Friday in August. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.